Welcome to the Climate Diplomacy Podcast, a podcast from the Berlin-based think and do tank Adelphi, bringing you the latest insights and debates in international climate diplomacy and security. I am your host, Raquel Munayed. In this series, you will hear from experts and practitioners offering their take on climate foreign policy, climate-related impacts to security, and promoting peace and resilience in a changing climate. For more information, please visit climate-diplomacy.org or follow us on Twitter under Climate Diplo. So today's guest is Lujain Haj Youssef. She is editor-in-chief at Rosana Radio, which is a news platform from Syria, and it describes itself as a free and impartial platform for civilians in and outside of Syria. Lujain has co-authored the article Syria's Poisoned Earth, How Years of Conflict Have Polluted and Destroyed Syrian Land. And we would like to discuss it today. There are several wars going on throughout the world today. We know that some of them for a very long time, others are brand new, but all of them are absolutely catastrophic for the environment. And this doesn't get said enough. We barely think of the environment when discussing war and conflict because the human suffering overshadows everything else, understandably. But the environmental destruction associated with war and conflict is elementary when it comes to human suffering, including in post-conflict settings, where environmental problems continue to affect human life in so many ways for decades. So it's clear we have to talk about it. And Syria provides a good example because it has been going through this conflict for about 11 years now, and we can now look back and assess the impacts that war had on the environment there. So Lujain, let's get started. Perhaps you can give us a quick overview of pre-war Syria. For example, how did people's livelihoods look like before, and what was some pre-existing environmental issues that people were already dealing with, these environmental issues before the war broke out?
Yes, the most prominent environmental problems that the Syrian was suffering from before the war were concentrated in the largest percentage of drought, soil erosion, and desertification due to deforestation and urban sprawl towards the countryside, which led to shrinkage of cultivated area. But with time, it was affected, of course, by the global climate change. Add to these problems, there were water pollution due to the mixing of water sources, and the water network with the sewage network and the waste resulting from oil refining. So we can say that this is the most problems that the people were faced before the pre-war.
Thank you. So things were already difficult, of course, but livelihoods were possible. So people were farming, even with these difficulties. And even if it was becoming more difficult with time, we can say people were farming, they were producing their food and having their livelihoods. Now, getting into the problem, you can tell us maybe a little bit about the investigation that led to the writing of this article that we're talking about today. Who conducted this investigation? How was it conducted? Where was it, in specific parts of Syria? Was it nationwide? What was investigated exactly?
As you know, the war in Syria is now in its 10 years, and there are many investigations that dealt with the effects of the war after targeting oil dredge guards. But from our point of view, the effects resulting from the war were broader than these specific points due to the spread of the area military operation over entire country. And because we are like in a Syrian radio, local radio. So in our work as a journalist, we began to monitor the percentage of deformed children and the high incidence of the unexploded remnants of war, the use of agriculture lands of military training, the placement of missiles platforms, and targeting them with the missiles. The question that seems to arise here, is it safe to buy products coming from inside Syria that are exposed to all this type of weapons? Of course, when we try to have this investigation, we choose a specific area in northern of Syria on the ground that over the years, it has been that focused military clash for different parties. So it was like a role model and a role places to work on it. So decided with our team of Rosana, with my colleague Maiskat and our correspondent inside Syria, Mahmoud Abu Ras, Abdul Ghani Arian, how to construct this investigation, We started to meet the farmers, how they affected, taking the photo, and of course, having Google Earth's photo, comparing with the another places that also affected by the conflict. And it was very good chance for us that Ambience News that they choose our idea, our pitch, between like 800 of pitches that they were arrived. And they were impressed and take care of our investigation. They liked the idea that because there is another phase of the war, no one talk about it, that it's agriculture's foods and the farmlands. So we worked on this investigation about more 9 months. Because it's difficult for us sometimes to having these examples or this to test the soil. So we plan to take studies comparing with another countries that faced conflict. And we focused that the main idea we tried to focus on is what extent the soil was affected by the armed conflict. Is it poisoned and how it did affect on the people later?
And what did the investigation uncover exactly?
We covered how the farmer affected by their crops were limited and the farms not producing the same amount of crops before, and how the farmland being less now, and how much that soil were affected by the weapons that used in that places.
Okay, so they have less farmland, they have productivity issues in the farmland that they still have, they have soil pollution, probably also water pollution. You didn't mention this now specifically, but I can imagine it being a big issue if the soil is polluted. So big problems there. And in terms of livelihood, so the activities that people have for their own existence, for eating, for their economic purposes, how have these changed? I mean, farming was affected, agriculture was affected, and many other livelihoods, not just farming, are tied to the environment in some form or another. We know that require water, require land. And with all these sudden and profound impacts, many of these activities are no longer possible. But for the people who stayed, the people who are still there, how are they adapting to these new conditions?
I can add in a point with your last question that in our study, as I said, that when we are comparing with countries that faced the same conflict before, it was the perfect place that we compare. It was the red zone in France, because it was in the World War One, where they were like have 7 months in Battle of Verdun, and they used different kinds of weapons in that place. And until now, since the World War One, enough until now, there's still places uninhabited. And we have to notice that the French government did a lot of work to clean these spaces. So just imagine if 7 months of war make still after all of these years, still there are places uninhabited. So imagine what's happening inside Syria with 10 years. Now, and there's any uncleaned places. So it's very important that when we work on this investigation and making this red alarm that please, we need to focus in this area because all these people are now facing a very difficult situation now and for the future. I mentioned that the continue of military operation has led to the farmers' inability to extend the irrigation network for their crops. And the independence has increased on farmers who depend on rain, feed agriculture completely, which is already depend on rainwater to provide water. But as we know now with climate change, it's being difficult for them. So this often makes it more vulnerable to irregular weather patterns, drought and evaporation from irrigation, and especially with increasing drought and people now who opened on rainfall. So now they are facing a very bad situation because to grow their crops are becoming more vulnerable to climate change. And we have to mention here the study conducted in 2017 in the Food Agriculture Organization that they said now if they started to rebuilding the agriculture sector over 3 years, was estimated at a total amount ranging from around $11 billion to $70 billion, depending on change in the conflict and the prospects for a peaceful solution. So it's a very important statement here, because that's meaning before 5 years. And the cost is being more and more while the everything is continue as it is.
Absolutely. As the war continues, the reconstruction costs grows with it.
And now we have the World Food Programme says, as the conflict in Syria enters the 11th year, there are about 12.5 million Syrians across the country of unprecedented levels of poverty and food insecurity.
Yeah, war is really not pretty. My colleagues and I, we have also worked on a report together with the WWF, which we just launched last May, looking into the links between environment, security, and peace. So in particular, environmental impacts that are not caused by or directly related to climate change. And we have identified in this report four main pathways through which environmental degradation, biodiversity loss, with how they interact with conflict, with insecurity, and also with peace. And one of the pathways that we have covered pertains to the impacts of war and conflict to the environment. So very much related to what you're telling us now. And there we looked into how the environment, it's often a casualty of war. And in other cases, how environmental destruction is not just a byproduct of war, but rather it's done strategically in the context of war and conflict. And there are also other ways in which war and conflict impact the environment, for example, by undermining environmental protection, because you don't have environmental protection programs in place anymore in the conflict context, and also in creating conditions for rise on environmental crime, like illegal mining or use of land for drug production, wildlife trade, etc. So it's interesting to hear from you how things progressed in the specific context of Syria. And perhaps you could now give us just a quick overview of the actor constellation in this conflict, in particular, peculiarities from each of these actors and how they have leveraged the environment in the conflict, whether there are specific environmental impacts that different actors cause, whether intentionally or not.
Unfortunately, all the parties of this fighting in Syria are joined in influencing the poisoning of the soil. Russia said in clear statements that there are more than 200 types of weapons are considered that, and the war in Syria was experimental marketing ground for its war production. And this was official statements coming from there. So they experienced their military products in Syria. Turkey party also, because they were following the Kurdish terrorists, as they said, they like cutting trees and having military points inside Syria. And the problems even with this political agreement, when they Turkey like left their military points, and a damage happened to these lands that they were rent from the farmers. The opposition accused the Syrian government of targeting agriculture land. But it also fails to mention trench and missiles launches and their military soldiers, how they train inside the farmlands. So all the parties who was fighting inside, they all having the responsibility of what happening inside. But each part's like, okay, you do it. You are targeting us. No, you are targeting us. No, no one like care about what it's happening. And even there's a like international agreements that I don't think that it was Russia and the Syrian regime were like signed, and they have this responsibility of cleaning the lands, even that the international security law forces all the countries who were involved in any war to clean the soil and that were affected by the war.
Thank you so much for outlining these impacts. I think it's great that you and your colleagues did this investigation, because we cannot afford to put the environment on the background anymore. We know better nowadays, and we know that a lot of human rights, like the right to food, to water, to housing, to a decent life, are tied to healthy and functioning ecosystems. So thank you for bringing this to our listeners and also just for doing this. And I hope that our listeners will also access your article to read it in full with all the details, because there are many more details that we didn't get to speak about today. We will put the link in the episode's description. But just before we close in, we looked into all those impacts, but perhaps you can give us a little bit of an outlook. What are future prospects for the region? I mean, the conflict is ongoing, so we know that the prospects are not necessarily amazing, but are there any examples of best practices in terms of how people are there and how they are adapting? And are perhaps farmers managing to regenerate land? Are there interesting projects that you stumbled upon?
It's something, it's because the cleaning the soil, it's costing a lot. So it's very hard for the people who take this responsibility about cleaning the soil and how much they can maybe clear their lands. But I think in light of political conflict, it will be difficult to start any solution in Syria related to the environment. And we know that after Iraq war on Kuwait, the international community provided a financial grants to clean the soil in the area of oil wells. The situation in Syria many requires a truly international decision to or inclusion of the issue of the environmental within its decisions regarding Syria. According to the Internal Committee of the Red Cross, 10 years of crisis Syria has left an estimated around 12 million people at risk of being affected with land mass and explosive remnants of war. So cleaning up this soil is taking two decision parts that now maybe the UN security has the chance while they having this process of political process, they can add the environment part to be inside. And the others, it's taking the financial step to finance all this process to clean the lands. Because if we didn't have this too, it will not be good enough, because having this political mention, that doesn't mean it will be force the parties to clean the lands. And if we didn't have this money, they will not clean the lands. So the responsibility, it's very big to say that only the people, they are trying to avoid all these places that were still having unbombed rockets, but still they don't have this awareness about the lands and how they have to deal with their lands now while they're poisoned. Yeah. Because the rockets, even if it's exploded on the air, but after it will be down to the soil and the planets will be take the poisoned water and the plant will give you a poisoned food.
Absolutely. There's only so much that people can do as individuals, right? With little resources. Absolutely.
Yes, yes. And in the whole picture, every person in this planet, he had to stop this war and be need to mention about what's happening, because even the climate change is affected. Because when we have all of these people now displaced and refugees in the borders, they also having a bad effect on the climate change in different way.
It's everyone's responsibility. I think that's what you're trying to say. And this is a global responsibility. These problems don't have borders like nations do. And like we talk also in the report that I just mentioned, we talk a lot about maladaptation when people are put into corners, right? They're forced to, they're displaced, they're forced to leave their home. They need to adapt in order to survive. And migration can be something positive. It can be just an adaptation strategy. And if it's well managed, it can be actually really good. But when it's not well managed, and we know that mostly it isn't, people end up maladapting, it's what we call. So they end up overusing patches of land in order to grow food. And it's not their fault. It's just the lack of management, right? I actually was going to ask you other questions, but you already answered them. I was going to ask you what are specific measures that could support a sustainable transition, but you already were very clear about that. Land needs cleaning and this requires financing because it's a way too big job for the local farmers and populations to do. Yeah.
And to not passing your question, I will finish with Food and Agriculture Organization of the World statement that this war can extend to other generations. and they mean what's happening in Syria. It's not limited to generations that experience conflict now. The chemical cannot remain in damaged soil for centuries after the end of conflict. So I think it's enough statements to understand how much it's important to clean the soil and having this vision in the future, because nobody cares.
I also was going to ask you if you see a role for the UN Security Council to pick up on this environmental security challenges and how these things are connected. But you also already got into that. You already mentioned.
But I will surprise you here that when we talk with them, they didn't have any studies about Syria in this part. And even when we try to interview some of them, they said that we don't have any experience in this place. And they refused to give us any official statement.
Yeah, I think for the Security Council, they're starting now to understand that you cannot, because the Security Council is a different body. They were created to be a reactive body, right? To react to and take, and environment and climate change are not something that you can be reactive. You have to be preventative. I mean, you can be reactive too, but you should be, in the best case scenario, preventative. Because you can prevent conflict situations even and security situations. So this is completely new for the council, and they're starting to pick it up now, starting with climate. And I think the environmental dimension is still pretty much, they haven't caught up on that yet.
And maybe the Syrian case was like something very complicated to deal after 10 years now. All approach that they were going to, it's failed. Now to add the environment part, I don't think they are ready to talk about it now.
We put together this report. We did make recommendations, not just for the UN Security Council, but for just for the UN system in general, on how to prevent and react to these issues, the environmental impacts of war and conflict. But it is complicated. And I think you started with doing an investigation. This is extremely important because you have now a precedent to look into other wars that are going on, maybe ones that are starting now and already looking into the future and what will happen if we don't act. But also not just using Syria as a lesson for other wars, but also seeing what can we do now in Syria or in other conflict contexts that are going through something similar, and to avoid human suffering for decades and perhaps hundreds of years. Lujain, thank you so much. It was great talking to you and getting this insight on Syria. You don't get to talk about environment in Syria. That's generally not a topic. So it's great that you've done this.
Thank you. And I want to thank you a lot because that you interested and you were like insist to have this interview. I very appreciate it. And I think while we are talking now, we can change. I believe in every step that we can do to have change at the end.
I believe that too. Thank you so much. And for our listeners, you can always reach out to us via our Twitter channel, Climate Diplo. Thank you for tuning in. And until next time, goodbye.
Bye-bye.